everybody, and welcome to episode 49 of Own the Road with Auto Trader, where we make car stuff simple for Canadians. My name is Jody Lai, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Auto Trader.
And I am Dan Alika, and I am Auto Trader's road test editor. And we are here in our, you know, new now, couple episodes in at 1990 Studios with producer extraordinaire Chris Dupuy.
Or, great.
As I would like to say, it's you, me, and Dupuy today.
I would watch that show. I think it would be a really fun show
there
to watch.
There you go. That was just my little shout out slash fun little intro for this episode.
Perfect.
Which has nothing to do with anything. It's just to do with EVs.
I mean, yeah, but I think the randomness of this podcast is part of what makes it so fun.
Okay. Well, riddle me this, because this was an idea. We've done EV episodes before.
Many.
It's obviously a hot topic. Jody asked me the other day, you know, what should we do? Any ideas? And I thought, you know, are EVs really the answer? It's a viable, you know, it's a
great question,
yeah,
for a lot of different reasons. You know, EVs are obviously such a huge topic right now, especially with the government mandates and this and that.
Wait, can we just go back to that?
Yeah, of course.
Guys, and I, for those of you watching, I just want to remind you, these aren't new. This whole, like, you know, the thing that's got everyone up in arms, it's absolutely bonkers to me. I think I said this on the last episode that we talked about EVs, that, you know, the government making it easier to get your hands on EVs was the lightning rod that everyone went, wait a minute. It's like, what? I understand we've all been busy and we're all stressed and life's expensive and there's lots to worry about. But like, this 2035 zero emission vehicle target is not new. This is years in the making. The government announced this years ago. And then back in December, when it announced that, hey, we're going to make sure that automakers have supply in Canada to meet the demand, all of you people went, what's going on? Why is the government trying to do this to me?
Yeah, and those mandates are really to help us.
It's unbelievable.
But just so, this is so funny. So you recently just drove the brand new Ram 1500, which has dropped the V8 engine.
It has.
And the people who are riled up about that V8 dropped in the comment section is crazy. And they're like, oh, if it doesn't have a V8, I refuse to buy it. And obviously, these are probably the same people who are freaking out about EVs.
It's wild. Yeah, honestly, like, maybe I should have seen it coming. I did not think it was going to be an issue at all with that truck. That straight six is phenomenal. And I didn't even mention it in the video because it, to me, is a non-issue.
Apparently, it's a major issue for these truck people.
People are still going off in the comments about how it's not a real truck, and also I don't understand why, you know, people will suddenly be like, well, it's too complex and whatever. It's like, come on, man, you're trying to
come
up with exactly. So yes, that was a little bit weird. And I think you're right. The Venn diagram of the anti-EV folks are, you know, the crossover with the, I won't even buy a straight six powered pickup truck. The reason that, look, I'll give you guys a brief summary of the reason that exists in the first place is because the Ram 1500 is so popular. Stellantis needs to reduce its fleet emissions average, and it cannot make that Hemi any more efficient and any better in terms of emissions, and that's why it's gone. This is just a reality, and it's also part of why we're moving towards electrification.
But what kills me about that is, isn't the inline six more powerful?
Way more powerful.
So what's the, they're like, oh, it doesn't sound like a man's truck.
So
I don't want it.
It's so dumb. It's throw on your affliction t-shirt and hop in your V8 powered pickup, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, okay, so I love V8s. Like, as car people, like, I cannot.
We drove here in a V8 powered Mercedes.
I cannot deny the appeal of a big old V8. Yeah. I love them. But I also know that they're not going to be around forever, right? And this whole debate about EVs, every time we talk about EVs, they're like, oh, you're just jumping on the propaganda train about EVs. I'm like, well, no, my job as an automotive journalist is to help spread the word, educate people, analyze stuff. I'm not an EV advocate. It's just what is happening. That is the reality of where the industry is going. And the content we make has to reflect that, right? And so I did want to clarify that, because while I can acknowledge that EVs are the way we're going, I don't think it's the best answer.
We've both made that clear on the podcast, yeah, and things that we've written in videos that we've done. But what it feels like to me, you know, people that are whatever against zero emission vehicles, whether they're EVs or otherwise, people that are against, you know, the discontinuation of V8s, it's a lot like just those big dopey dinosaurs that see this big asteroid coming and just go, oh, I'm going to keep, you know, munching on these trees and living my life. It's like, that's not how this works, man. Like, this isn't propaganda. This isn't, you know, being an alarmist. Experts are warning us that climate change is real. It's happening. We need to do better. And if that means getting rid of V8 engines, I'm sorry. Like, deal with it, man.
Yeah.
That's just, and also, again, like we've talked about before, that doesn't mean that there anyone's coming to take your V8 powered pickup truck that you already own. You can keep driving that thing if you want and you want to keep being a dinosaur, that's fine. But like, the reality is we all have to be in this together.
Yeah.
And that's why we wanted to do this episode, because like Jody said, and I'm very much the same way, neither of us are especially, you know, pro EV. We see the merits of them, but we also, just like so many of you out there, you know, see the issues. I just drove along with a few other journalists. We took a Toyota Prius and a Toyota RAV4 hybrid. This was very strategic. The Prius, because it's, you know, that's the one that introduced, you know, hybrids to us in North America 20 years ago, whatever. And then the RAV4 is the best selling vehicle in Canada that isn't a pickup truck. So I pushed really hard to have that in the mix for this drive. We took these vehicles and drove them to the eastern shores of James Bay, to Chisasibi, Quebec, which is a Cree community. And it was eye-opening for a lot of different reasons. It was really cool to, you know, be on a snowmobile and go out to an island in the middle of James Bay, which is technically, you know, Nunavut territory. It was a cool experience, but it was also eye-opening to see the kind of damage, for lack of a better term, that's been done building that big, you know, Robert Bourassa hydro facility up there. That's like 15,000 megawatts of power. It's 20% of Quebec's power, but so much of that land has been flooded in order to make this happen. So again, I look at that and you know, curse electricity in general.
Right.
And then think, oh my God, how much more are we going to need for EV? So I am with so many of you guys, but I also go, climate change is real. Everyone up there is saying it's real. The ice on James Bay, when we went out there, the guy that took us out was telling us that the ice is less than 3 meters thick now, when this time of year it should be, you know, 4 or 5
wow,
like feet. So two meters as opposed to a meter, right? This is the reality. It's not a coincidence, okay? I understand it's February. We have random day. This is Canada. Part of our weirdness is our weather. But this consistent run, we're in Toronto. There hasn't been snow on the ground for more than like a couple days.
Yeah. Yesterday it was pouring rain and there was a thunderstorm.
Today it is 13 degrees in Toronto. Okay. This isn't normal. And if it was one off, sure, we have 13 degree days, I guess, in late February. That's not totally crazy. But the reality is the weather has been, you can call it a coincidence if you want. It's just, it's not true. This is climate change in action. And this is the planet telling us, guys, get it together, because we're heading towards disaster. And then people go, you can't take my V8 powered pickup truck. And it's like, yes, but we need to.
Yeah. And so your trip up north was super eye-opening for you, especially because you had mentioned that fueling up with gas was very hard to do, right? Because the gas stations were so few and far between.
There were even less. So okay. When you drive up there, when you leave a place called Matagami, Quebec, which is, I don't know, about halfway to Chisasibi from Toronto, so about 1,500 kilometers, so about 750, you hit a place called Matagami. That is the last EV charging station. Now, okay, if somebody out there knows of another public charger that's further north, but I did some extensive digging online, looked at physical maps, I was exploring behind the wheel of a Prius and a RAV4, The last EV charging station I could find was in Mattagami. Then you've got 381 kilometers until your next gas station. There's no EV charger there. And then 381 gets you to Chisasibi. And then if you go east of Chisasibi about an hour, you hit a place called Radisson. And that's where it's basically like a town. It's an unincorporated village that's basically all just Hydro-Québec employees. Right. It is the biggest hydro facility in North America, and there isn't even an EV charger there. How unbelievable is that?
Yeah, so EVs as they are now, and the infrastructure as it is now, completely not ready for where we need to go.
Not in Canada.
Not in Canada. In other countries, they're a lot more advanced than we are because they started this process a lot earlier. Like Norway, for example, is like a shining star of that.
Norway's going to hit its... So Norway made its target for 100% EV sales of 2025. It looks like it's going to hit that target this spring.
Wow.
So it is early, but Norway is also a postage stamp compared to the legal-sized envelope that is Canada.
Yeah.
So Norway has that advantage, and also Norway has invested in infrastructure and encouraged private enterprise to invest in infrastructure, and we have not done that in Canada.
No, the situation here is actually pretty miserable. And so right now we're not ready, but I think a lot of people are forgetting that from now until 2035, things will have to improve drastically.
Yes.
The technology, the infrastructure, everything will have to get so much better than it is now in order to make 100% EV adoption a real thing.
There's also this idea that, you know, like the advancement in technology and stuff, like it kind of... The advancement doubles, or like the time it takes is cut in half for every, you know, next kind of generation. So I think the gap is going to close. But yeah, right now, and don't get me wrong, there is money out there for incentives for EV charging stations, both at home and for businesses to invest in them, whatever. But it's like, yeah, you can't. It boggles my mind that we're in this place where governments, not just the current government. I know everybody likes to, you know, just add one more thing to blame on Justin Trudeau. It's like this predates him. But yeah, sure, his government is just as responsible. Where we need this infrastructure, if you build it, they will come. If you have a place to plug in, then of course I am going to. But it's no different than anything in life. If there's a park and there are picnic tables, you are going to get more people that come and eat lunch in parks. If there are no picnic tables, people are going to be like, cool, there's nowhere for me to eat lunch.
So my other problem with the infrastructure is that, like, it's great that I'm seeing chargers pop up all over the place. I'm really happy to see that. However, I've also pulled up to so many chargers that are out of service, and they've been out of service for months.
Yeah.
And so why aren't these companies maintaining these chargers? Because it's such a bad experience. Just last week, I was driving the Hyundai Kona EV, pulled up the Shell Recharge app, because now Shell has a lot of these really fast stations. Okay, that's another rant. I'm going to revisit that in a second. But the app said they had two chargers available, and both of them were open. I'm like, perfect. I'm going to have 40 minutes to charge. The rest of my day will be set as long as I get this charge.
Yeah.
Pull up. In the time it took me to drive there, one charger was occupied by a Polestar 2. Okay, fine. The other one, out of service.
Yeah.
And then the Polestar driver told me that it's been out of service for months.
Yeah. And
so
that's,
it's like, why haven't they been fixing this? It's such a bad experience.
And I'm also, my question is, and surely somebody has, and this isn't my, you know, my holier than thou speech, but it's like, anytime I pull up to a charger that's broken, I report it. I either call the number or if there's like an email address or some sort of contact form, because it's like, how many people do you think pull up and go, well, it's broken, and they leave, but it's their local charger or it's halfway. I remember, you know, I met a guy in Milton who was, he owned a Kona EV and he lived in Guelph and he worked in Toronto. And so he would stop at this charger in Milton quite frequently. It was, you know, his personal choice, kind of local fast charger. But when there were problems with it, it was at Petro-Canada, and he would report it because he's like, well, I use this all the time. I want to make sure it works.
Absolutely.
And that to me, yeah, it sucks, but these aren't it. I guess it's one of those things where I've said this before. We need to change our approach. we need to change the way that we look at this because it's the equivalent of a gas station. And sometimes they're at gas stations, but it's not, you know, there's no attendant, so to speak.
Right.
Even the ones that are at gas stations, the person inside they can't even print you a receipt.
No, I know.
The systems aren't even connected, which is, again, that's another rant.
So my issue with that is that all of these EV charging systems are connected to their head office or whatever, right?
Yes.
And so you can see that it's out of service.
Yeah.
And so there should be a flag.
Have you ever talked to these customer service
people? No, I know. That's also a good point. But I was just so frustrated.
They could care less. And I understand. I'm sure, just like anyone who deals in customer service, I'm sure they deal with more than their fair share of, you know, abusive mm-hmm. language and whatever. But, like, it's unbelievable to me that you call and go, hey, like, it's not working. I had one time the charger was locked. It had nothing to do with the car. There was a fault in the charger. And so it went into this like lockdown mode where it locked I couldn't remove the charger from the vehicle because it was a fault on the station. And I called and this lady was just so indifferent. She was like, you know, try unlocking the doors. I was like, yeah, I did.
Did you try turning it off and on again?
And then she literally, yeah, like take it out and blow in the cartridge. What is this? Like a Nintendo? Anyways, I was like, I'm like, I don't know what to do. And she's like, I don't know what to tell you. And I was like, well, this is kind of your job to tell me. Like, am I supposed to just sit here?
Wow.
So, you know, there are a lot of flaws for sure. This also goes back to this idea, you know, circling back to these people with their, you know, no V8s. Sure, you don't want a straight six. But you also don't want an EV, but you can't keep doing what you're doing. So it's like if the government, if the EPA and, you know, Transport Canada, Environment Canada, all these government agencies are saying, listen, here's a compromise we'll allow. Make that pickup truck a little bit more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Sell some other people some Fiat 500Es and you can build a Ram 1500 with a straight six. And you're like, no, I don't want that. And then it's like, okay, cool. Well, here's your future of an EV.
Yeah.
No, I don't want that. And it's like, come on, man. And the crazy part is anytime I talk to people, I think I've said this before, people with kids. I don't have kids. I could go scorched earth and be like, psh, you know, it was fun while it lasted. But I'm like, no, man, I want to make sure that this planet is still alive and kicking so that my nieces and my nephew and your, you know, niece and nephew
yeah.
and all these people, all of my friends that have kids, strangers, I don't care. I want to make sure that there's a planet left for people, and you can tell me that I'm an alarmist and that I'm fear-mongering all you want. I am telling you the truth because I'm not a scientist. All the scientists out there are the ones that are telling us, hey, guys,
believe them.
We got a bit of a problem here.
Yeah.
And everybody goes, give me my plastic spoons and my V8 trucks, and I don't care. And it's like, come on, man.
Like, it's not my problem.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, yeah, but it's your kid's problem.
Yeah.
So let's do something. But again, Jody and I are saying, like, we want to see hydrogen vehicles. We want to see solid state batteries. We want to see better technology.
Absolutely. So hydrogen, we get a lot of questions about hydrogen vehicles because, again, with all this conversation around EVs, a lot of people are talking about it again.
Yeah.
As a solution, I think it's fantastic because it refuels just as quickly as a gas vehicle, has all the benefits of an EV and not really any of the downsides, except we have to talk about the infrastructure again because the hydrogen refueling infrastructure in Canada is essentially non-existent,
yeah.
unless you live in like BC.
And so years ago, I wrote this story about, you know, the woeful state of infrastructure in Canada, and I brought up hydrogen, and at the time, there was like 11 stations in Canada, and it was like 10 of them were in these are publicly. So there are commercial stations because there are some hydrogen powered commercial trucks. But in terms of like consumer, you know, public stations that you can go to, there's like 11 in Canada and like 10 of them are in BC and one of them is in Quebec. And I used this example of the Toyota Mirai, which is a hydrogen powered sedan. And I wasn't dunking on the Mirai, but I used the example of that Toyota Canada had to flatbed the Mirai from a media testing event overnight to Quebec to refuel it, to bring it back for day two of testing. And Toyota got upset, which I understand, you know, it's the PR team's job to, you know, kind of make sure that the brand's name isn't being sullied. But it's like, dude, that has nothing to do with you. Keep building the Mirai. I will, you know, gladly celebrate the fact that Toyota is one of two brands that sells hydrogen-powered vehicles. This criticism is about the infrastructure. It has nothing. I'm on your team. I'm saying poor Toyota had to flatbed this thing to Quebec. This is unbelievable to me that because automakers, I've said this before, you know, they're hedging their bets. So of course, if there's no hydrogen infrastructure, what's the incentive for automakers to build hydrogen vehicles? And just like now, automakers don't have, sure, back in the day, you had big relationships between, you know, big oil and OEMs, especially like the Detroit 3.
Right.
But that's not the case now. You don't have these OEMs getting behind hydrogen refueling companies and being like, hey, you guys need to build this infrastructure. Somebody has to do that.
Yeah.
Because vehicles are built, you know, there's always the chicken or the egg, you know, which comes first, supply, demand, who's making SUVs popular? Is it consumers or is it OEMs pushing SUVs? You know, opinions differ. But when it comes to, you know, how vehicles are fueled, they are building vehicles in response to the fueling infrastructure that's available. And if there are no hydrogen fueling stations, why the hell would these companies build hydrogen cars?
And it's kind of baffling to me because there are a lot of other automakers who have like fully working prototypes of really great hydrogen powered vehicles.
Yes.
And they're like waiting to pull the trigger on them, but they're kind of like, their hands are tied because there's no infrastructure. Yeah. And so it's so sad to me that this great technology exists, but for nothing.
Somebody has to really, you know, quarterback this entire thing. And I know, you know, again, it's going to upset those, you know, fist waving, you know, anti-EV people, but it's like, we need like a, I hate that term, like czar, but we need an electrification czar in this country.
Yeah.
Somebody that steps up and goes and gets all the, one of your favorite terms, stakeholders in the room and says, hey, you guys at, whether it's the gas station companies, which I've said before, what a perfect, you know, solution. They have these franchises everywhere that.
And it's a way to future-proof their business.
Exactly. So you need to sit down with these gas station companies. You need to sit down with malls. You need to sit down with the OEMs, whatever, government, everyone. Sit down and say, how do we get this across, you know, the goal line? I've said it before and I'll say it again just so you guys don't think that Jody and I are here, you know, to push EVs and what. I don't love that idea in their current form. Big battery packs, 400 kilometers of range. It's terrible.
It's not great.
In this country, that does not work. If we're in Europe, sure, man. Let's rock and roll.
Yeah, but like look at how big our country is, right? But I just want us to imagine a world, say it's like, I don't know, let's say 7 to 10 years away from now where an EV has a solid state battery.
Yeah.
It can go 1,200 kilometers on a single charge, and it only charges in 10 minutes to get to 100%. What a game changer that would be. That would literally solve every single problem I have as a condo dweller with no EV charging at home. Yeah. I would 100% get behind that if that were the case.
Yeah.
And that's coming.
Yeah.
And it needs to get here quicker.
For sure. But it's also, you know, there's that we need these early adopters. For people that criticize early adopters, you know, really do like thank them. I think we all owe them a debt of gratitude.
Absolutely.
Because they buy they're on the kind of front line of it. They buy the current iteration that isn't great, that the rest of us are, you know, gun shy about. But that allows the automakers to continue to develop.
That's why I think Tesla is just killing it right now.
And Tesla, the smartest thing, I think I said this last time, the smartest thing Tesla with this supercharger network, I still see new installations coming. And now that, you know, so many OEMs have signed up for the Tesla charger, as it's the NACS charger, but you know, they're going to be able to use non-Teslas are going to be able to use Tesla chargers. There's one that open. If you look just off the QEW in Mississauga, there's this little plaza with a grocery store and a liquor store and a couple other shops, a brand new massive, there has to be, I don't know, if there were 20 chargers, like I'm pretty sure it's a ton. And that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, Tesla was ahead of the game. Tesla owners, a lot of them are you know, ignorant. And I hate that mentality of, you know, you claim that you don't care. You just want to see people buy EVs. And then when people buy non-Teslas, all you do is dunk on them. And it's like, come on, man. I could do the same to you when I'm testing. Hop in this GLS, this Mercedes GLS I'm driving, and tell me that your Tesla can you know, hold a candle to this thing in terms of like the luxury amenities. So it's like people could do the same to Tesla owners, but don't. But then Tesla owners, you know, get up on their soapbox, and that doesn't do anyone any good. It makes people jaded. It makes people, you know, dislike you as a person and just generally go, I don't want to be associated with that attitude. So again, talking about getting stakeholders around the table, stop being mean. Stop looking down on people, being condescending, you know, trash talking somebody who buys a Kia Niro EV. That's an affordable electric vehicle that's actually pretty damn good.
It's really good.
So if somebody wants to buy that, let them do it and just say good for them or say nothing at all. Why do you even need to go on Twitter and tell some stranger that they're an idiot for not buying? How many comments have we seen on YouTube? Oh, you know, the biggest problem with buying a Niro EV, it's not a Tesla. It's like, yeah, man. But there's a lot of people that don't want Teslas because of people like you.
That's actually true. And as good as Teslas are, they are far from perfect. I think the best selling feature is that, yeah, big battery, lots of range, and the supercharging network. But literally everything else is like, I could leave it.
And the quality that is still, yes, it's gotten better. And I've said before, just so any Tesla owners out there, like our buddy Maroon, I don't want you to think I'm just here to tear them. Tesla has done a lot, not just for electrification, for safety. Tesla has gone above and beyond,
absolutely,
has made its vehicles safer than they need to be. Tesla has moved the needle in a lot of ways, but that arrogance tied with it, it's hard to, you know, eventually you get to that breaking point, right? Where it's not going to go away. And that's not helping matters in terms of EV adoption.
No.
But, you know, another one, there was a colleague wrote a review of the F-150 Lightning on another publication, and I read it in the comment section. People were going off about how demand is down and blah, blah, blah. This must be sponsored content. It's like, no, man, just because he praised, like, the F-150 Lightning is really good.
It's a fantastic truck.
And he wrote a positive review, and you think that it's because it supply, you know, is outstripping demand right now, so Ford has scaled back production, so they must be, you know, trying to get sponsored content to promote. No, man, that's not how this works.
This is just how business works. When demand is less, because gas prices aren't as crazy as they used to be, which means EV interest has gone down.
Yeah, and interest rates are so high that paying an astronomical price tag for a pickup truck just doesn't work for people right now. There's an affordability crisis in general. If you can't put food on the table, if you can't pay your mortgage, then you're not going to go out and spend 80 grand on an electric pickup truck. But you could say the same across the board, you know, about anything aside from like high-end luxury vehicles. Demand is down in luxury items everywhere. So it's like this to me is not an indicator of people. Also used the one that really just got to me.
Oh no.
Was when Hertz announced, because Hertz said, oh, we're going hard into EVs. And then, you know, late last year, scaled back. I think the order itself canceled a bunch and said that the company as a whole was going to offload a bunch of EVs because the consumer interest, you know, wasn't very high. And all these people are like, aha, look,
I told you.
And I'm like, since when do we look at a rental car company as the barometer of anything?
Well, these people will just grab onto anything that they can use
exactly,
to perpetuate
exactly.
that message, right?
If you're using it to prove that nobody cares about EVs, then are we supposed to say, oh man, the Nissan Versa is a killer car. Just ask Enterprise. You know, they bought 10,000 of them. It's like, no, that's still a piece of junk. And so why are we using a rental car company as the barometer of this? Like, to me, this is a reality. This is EVs are not where they need to be, but they're getting there. Infrastructure is not where it needs to be. That one is more concerning.
Mm-hmm.
Are they really the answer? This is ultimately, we're coming down to the close here. Are EVs the answer? Jody?
Not the way things are looking now, but I am very hopeful that the innovation in the space is going to happen, so it will become the answer.
So, and then here's my take. Last year, 2023, Toyota Canada sold 100,000 electrified vehicles. So, you know, a ton of hybrids and plug-in hybrids and probably three Toyota BZ4Xs and two Lexus RZs because nobody's buying those things because they're compliance vehicles. But electrified vehicles, that's kind of this 100,000. And Toyota said, we were at that event and Larry Hutchison, the CEO, said, you know, that's the equivalent of putting 38,000 zero emission vehicles on the road.
And what a great
which
solution.
Which is great, right? Yeah. That's very optimistic. But, you know, I heard those words and my first thought was, well, but you know what's the equivalent of putting 100,000 zero emission vehicles on the road is putting 100,000 zero emission vehicles on the road. So sure, like in this like utopian world that Toyota wants to put us in, Toyota sells hybrids and they're great. Like I just said, I took two of them up north and really was digging it. I've always liked them, but that it's a Band-Aid solution when we're bleeding and we need stitches and we need, you know, something heavy. Slapping a Band-Aid on it and calling it a day.
And I hate to bring up the government once again, but like the government has to do better with this because you can't leave businesses to make these decisions on their own because they're always going to go towards what is most profitable, not necessarily what is better for everybody.
You can't leave businesses to do it, you know, on their own, and you can't leave people because sure, you have this small minority of people that are willing to do the right thing, so to speak, and then a bunch of people that aren't, and that's why the government needs to step in. Government. Step in. That's it. That's the call to action here, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, before we get to our Ask an Expert segment, here's a few words from your friends at Auto Trader.
Can't find a car at your ideal price point? Auto Trader is the answer. Car prices are dropping across Canada, and Auto Trader has got you covered with hundreds of thousands of cars for you to choose from. Use our price badges to find a great deal at a great price today. Visit AutoTrader for more.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you, Dan, for that really awkward introduction to our Ask an Expert.
I looked at the clock and I was like, oh man, we got to get on this. We're just going to keep going.
But it's because you're not used to saying it. That's usually my job. So it was a bit weird. Anyway, today's Ask an Expert comes from Paulina.
Hello, Paulina.
I have a Nissan Qashqai, and apparently Nissan will be discontinuing them from the Canadian market. My lease ends this month, and I was planning to lease another Qashqai. Do you think it's a bad idea to lease a car that's being discontinued? By the end of the lease, do you think it will have a lower resale value if I buy out the lease because it's no longer available? Thank you, crying face.
It's a great question. It's a tough question. No, a vehicle being discontinued should not affect the residual value. If anything, it might affect it on kind of a positive note. And I'm not, you love your Qashqai. I'm not saying it's a bad vehicle, but you know, certain vehicles, like if the Jeep Wrangler, let's say, was being discontinued, the residuals would be sky high. So the resale value would be, and they already are.
Yeah, because it's such a popular make model. It's iconic.
But if it's being discontinued, then of course that's going to be even higher.
Then there's a scarcity thing.
Exactly. I don't think that's going to affect your situation with your Qashqai. If you want to, you know, continue leasing the current one that you have, sure, you can extend that lease or end the current one early. Especially if you're leasing another vehicle from especially the same dealer that you lease that one from, there's usually a little bit of flexibility that they might take your old one back early, break the lease without penalty, and roll you into the next one. So if you're looking to do this, talk to someone at the dealership and try to get that done so that you can get into your 2024 Qashqai before it's too late if it ends up being discontinued after this year. But no, it shouldn't affect the residuals on it.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Paulina, for your question. If any of you have questions that you would like to ask Dan or I, you can email expert@trader.ca. And that wraps up episode 49. Thank you so much for joining us. Next episode is episode 50. You don't want to miss this one because it's a bit of a surprise. But Dan and I are going to be answering a bunch of questions. The whole episode is going to be Ask an Expert. It's the first time we've ever done this. So make sure to tune into that. And drive safe, and we'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.